The function and operation of the Great Pyramid. Firstly, it is very important to understand that no evidence of an original burial has ever been found in any pyramid in Egypt. Orthodox Egyptologists tell us that the pyramids were built as tombs for ancient kings. However, there is actually very little evidence to suggest this. Egyptologists are well aware of this, but they still cling to this idiotic theory that has no foundation. It would appear that some pyramids were infiltrated many years after their construction and mummified remains were placed there. However, these bodies were not placed there at the time of construction, and if we visit the Valley of the Kings, very clearly we see how royalty were buried. All the tombs of ancient pharaohs and queens are richly decorated with extremely ornate funerary scenes and hieroglyphics. If we enter any tomb in the Valley of the Kings, there is absolutely no doubt that we are in a tomb of royalty, as we see a beautifully ornate sarcophagus and many beautiful objects of art, and the walls are covered in colour. On the other hand, if we enter the Great Pyramid, or any other pyramid for that matter, there is absolutely no evidence of hieroglyphics, decorations of any sort, or even a true sarcophagus. The main reason that Egyptologists believe that the pyramids were used as burial chambers is due to the fact that each of these structures contains a rectangular box that they assume was a sarcophagus. However, none of these boxes look anything remotely like the sarcophagi we see in, for instance, the Valley of the Kings. It would be very unusual indeed to construct such a massive structure as the Great Pyramid and yet not even include one single hieroglyph or decoration in commemoration of the king that was buried there. The pyramids were simply never built as tombs. They did, however, have a much more important function. The Great Pyramid, and all pyramids for that matter, were constructed using high technology and carried out very specific functions. In order to understand this function, we need to look at some of the many features and anomalies present in the Great Pyramid. Firstly, the entire King's Chamber is constructed of granite, which of course is full of mica. I mentioned earlier about the discovery of a 90-foot square sheet of mica at Teotihuacan in Mexico, and that mica has piezoelectric properties. In the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid, the so-called sarcophagus or rectangular box itself is made from a very unusual and very hard form of granite that is filled with an unusual type and an unusual amount of mica. If we look at the sarcophagus, we also see that it exhibits signs that a power tool was used to cut it. Now, that evidence is very clear indeed. For instance, if we have a power saw and we wish to cut a piece of wood with it, we would normally draw a line along the piece of wood with a pencil and then bring the power saw down on the line and then cut along that guideline. However, sometimes if we bring a power saw down too quickly, or if we do not bring the saw down exactly along the line, we will make a miscut as the saw burrows down into the wood. We are then left with a mark in the wood. Now we see exactly the same on the edge of the king's sarcophagus. In fact, we see a number of these miscuts. The ancient Egyptians could not possibly have made these miscuts if they were only using copper saws to cut the granite. This is simply because it would be a very slow process indeed, and if they had made a miscut, then that miscut would only have literally scratched the surface of the rock. On top of that, it is impossible to cut granite using copper tools. Although the king's sarcophagus shows definite signs that power tools were used in its construction, I personally feel that these so-called miscuts were actually made intentionally. I believe that these small, narrow cuts into the granite were made in order to very accurately tune the sarcophagus to a very specific audible frequency. Some blocks in the Great Pyramid are up to 400 tons in weight and once again extremely accurately placed and aligned. The Great Pyramid is full of enigmas, and it would be absolutely impossible to build something remotely similar today with our present-day technology. Robert Bovell, author of The Orion Mystery and other interesting books, believes that all the pyramids, the Sphinx, temples and other structures on the Giza Plateau are an exact replica of the sky. The three main pyramids appear to be an exact replica of the stars of Orion's belt. We also discover that the so-called ventilation shafts that we find in the King's Chamber point directly at Orion's belt, but at one date only, and that is at 10,500 BC. So it would appear that the entire Giza complex was laid out or designed at around 10,500 BC. Egyptologists tell us that the Great Pyramid was actually built by Khufu around 2,500 BC. However, there is very sketchy evidence indeed that this is actually the case. It would appear, though, that something did happen at the Great Pyramid around 2,500 BC. A lot of work definitely took place at the Great Pyramid around this time. I feel that it was actually repaired or altered at that date, but that it was definitely not actually constructed at that time. If we look at the lower course of the Great Pyramid, once again, what we find is huge monoliths, absolutely massive hulking pieces of rock that is characteristic of all very ancient structures and not at all characteristic of such recent dates as 2500 BC. Once again, these are all perfectly cut and joined with extreme accuracy, just like all ancient structures around the world. The great seer, Edgar Cayce, told us at the beginning of the 20th century that in ancient times the Great Pyramid housed a great crystal in the Grand Gallery. Now, the Grand Gallery is a massive passageway with a corbelled vaulted ceiling leading up to the King's Chamber. And this great crystal was held in the talons of an eagle made from gold, and that this great crystal was moved up and down the Grand Gallery in order to tune the Great Pyramid, because the Great Pyramid is actually a machine. If we look at the ancient clay tablets from Sumeria, they also tell us exactly what was housed in the Great Pyramid. Now, obviously, these records come from around 3000 or 4000 BC, which is well before the date Egyptologists tell us that Khufu constructed the Great Pyramid. So these ancient clay tablets tell us exactly what was contained in the Great Pyramid before the repairs to it took place around 2500 BC. Interestingly, the ancient Sumerians tell us that there were rows of crystals placed inside the Great Pyramid. Now, this is very similar to what Edgar Cayce told us at the beginning of the last century, and it is clearly too similar to be a coincidence. When I visited the Great Pyramid in 1999, I was also in the Grand Gallery. It is a very large passageway, as I say, with a corbel vaulted ceiling, which go up and up and up above you. This passageway is inclined at an angle, and you need to almost pull yourself upwards as you move up the walkway towards the King's Chamber. When I was in the Grand Gallery, I very clearly saw what looked like ratchet marks. In other words, pieces of rock, each one a few inches long, rectangular in shape, and placed along both the right-hand wall and the left-hand wall of the Grand Gallery. Each one of these ratchets was placed vertically and was separated from each other by a few inches. Some of these have actually broken away, but many are still in existence. To me, it indicated very clearly that some sort of mechanical assembly, perhaps with cogwheels, used to click along these ratchets. This may well have been the great crystal mentioned by the seer Edgar Cayce, or it may have been rows of crystals, as indicated by the Sumerian records, used to tune the machine. If we visit the King's Chamber again, there are some interesting acoustical phenomena that are produced by the chamber itself. The entire King's Chamber is tuned to one audible frequency, and that is 438 hertz, or 438 cycles. So I feel it would be accurate to say that the King's Chamber is actually a resonant cavity or tuning mechanism. And when you are in the King's Chamber, the reflections of sound off the walls can be rather confusing when you are speaking with someone. It can be very, very difficult to understand what someone is saying to you, even though they may be right beside you, as all the reflections of the sound of their voice bouncing off the walls around you makes their voice sound very jumbled and almost unintelligible. Also, as I mentioned earlier, there is a piezoelectric effect in mica. When mica is bent or compressed, it produces an electrical current. When you consider that there are thousands of tons of rock pressing down on the walls of the King's Chamber, there is obviously electrical activity in the King's Chamber at all times. Also, whenever a sound is amplified by the King's Chamber, it produces a very subtle vibration or movement in the mica contained in the walls of the chamber, and a tiny electrical current can start to flow. I had read many experiences of people who had laid down in the King's sarcophagus and toned. During my visit, I also conducted the same experiment. As I lay down in the sarcophagus and started toning, the sound of my voice seemed to bounce back and forth or up and down the length of the sarcophagus. The sound of my voice, with every reflection, became louder and louder until my entire body was vibrating in resonance. This was an incredible experience with the power of sound. It seemed that the energy of my voice was building and building and building until the tone of my voice was almost deafening and my body was vibrating strongly. Every atom in my body appeared to be vibrating in resonance with the tone I was producing. This experience enabled me to really understand certain principles that I had learned about previously. Now, interestingly, during my time in Egypt, prior to this experience, for some reason I kept thinking about lasers. As I walked around Egypt or as I slept at night, lasers kept coming into my consciousness. I was even dreaming about lasers. Now, to be honest, I really don't have much interest in lasers. About 20 years ago, when I was studying electronic engineering, we had covered the principles behind laser technology, and although it was interesting, I did not really wish to pursue it any further. However, during my stay in Egypt, lasers kept intruding on my thoughts. When I lay down in the King's sarcophagus, a lot of pennies started to drop, and I understood why my mind had been interrupted by thoughts of lasers. At this point, I feel it is necessary to briefly explain the principles behind the operation of lasers, as it is fundamental to what I believe enables the Great Pyramid to function. A laser uses light. A laser beam is a very concentrated form of coherent light. In a laser, we have a chamber with a mirror at each end. These mirrors are semi-transparent, and a light beam shines through one of these mirrors into the chamber. That light beam then bounces back and forth between each of the mirrors and comes out the other side in an extremely concentrated, coherent beam of light. Each time the light reflects off the mirror at one end of the chamber, it adds in phase to a previous reflection. The result is that the beam of light becomes very intense or concentrated. Now, this is the principle behind lasers. Sound, just like light, is also a vibration. Now, if we can build a laser using light, then of course we can carry out the same principle using sound. And this is exactly what the King's sarcophagus appears to be. It is a resonating chamber that acts in a similar manner to the chamber found in a laser, only the vibration here is sound and not light. It is an acoustic resonating chamber that is used to carry out, as I say, a very specific purpose. So how does the Great Pyramid operate? It is my understanding that the Great Pyramid has many functions. I believe that it also has a great effect on human consciousness and may even have an effect on the consciousness of every human being on the planet. And I also believe that it has been used as an initiation chamber. However, in this presentation, we will not be examining the effects on consciousness or how or why they might have been produced. I believe that one of the principal uses of the Great Pyramid was as an acoustical damper that had the effect of nullifying or reducing seismic or earthquake activity around the globe. If we look at the placement of the Great Pyramid on the planet, it is located in a very interesting position. The Great Pyramid of Giza is actually positioned at the exact center of the entire landmass of the planet, and it is in the most perfect position on the planet for such a machine to operate effectively. As I mentioned earlier, many years ago I was an electronic engineer, and I had some experience in the transmission of microwaves. Now, a satellite dish is constructed in such a manner as to focus energy. Some microwave transmission mediums use a pyramid or horn-shaped metallic box in order to focus energy. I believe that the Great Pyramid also collects and focuses energy in a similar manner. The Great Pyramid listens to or picks up the low vibration or rumble caused by earthquake or seismic activity in the bowels of the Earth from around the globe. Every time there is a shift or movement in the Earth, there is a low sound or tone. In other words, any time anything vibrates, a sound is emitted. When an earthquake is active at any point on the planet, the Great Pyramid picks up the vibrations or sound of that earthquake. It then amplifies that sound very considerably and then retransmits that same sound or low rumble back into the Earth in direct antiphase with the original sound. This has the effect of cancelling or nullifying the earthquake activity to a sizable extent. I also believe that the Great Pyramid is capable of producing additional power that may have been used by the ancient Egyptians long before the time of the pharaohs or dynastic Egypt. A remarkable man who lived in the early part of the 20th century, Victor Schauberger, studied the properties of water and discovered that water, far from being just a common liquid, has the ability to transport vast quantities of raw energy. Victor spent many years studying the movement of water in nature and discovered that waters of different temperatures have different energetic properties. Having observed the ability of fish to remain virtually motionless in a fast stream while facing towards the flow of the stream, Victor realized that fish somehow have the ability to nullify or counteract the flow of the river and prevent themselves from being washed away. It seemed that perhaps the fish were using some energy present in the water to resist the flow of the stream and remain motionless. In one fascinating experiment, he discovered that if the water of the stream was heated, the fish no longer had the ability to remain in the same place and were washed away by the current. Amazingly, he went on to discover that water at certain temperatures had the ability to actually counteract the effects of gravity. Also, through observing nature, Victor Schauberger discovered that energy actually moves in vortexes or spirals. We can see the evidence for this when we observe the spiraling effects in whirlwinds, the way blood spirals through our arteries, and from watching water vortex down the plug hole of our bath. Everywhere in nature we see this vortexing action at work. Victor Schauberger invented many devices and methods of obtaining energy from the vortex action in water. It appears that there is unlimited power available to be tapped as we approach the center of a vortex. The ancient name for Egypt was Kemet, and its peoples were known as the Kemetians. Amazingly, we find that to this day there is an indigenous wisdom tradition still existing in Egypt that remembers and understands the functions and purposes of the pyramids. The ancient Kemetians understood very well the energy-carrying properties of water and utilized this understanding in creating power for their civilization. The ancient Kemetian word for pyramid is actually Per-Neter, which means house of nature. The ancient Kemetian wisdom tradition tells us that the pyramids were used to harness the forces of nature in such a way as to create a power source. Underneath the entire Giza complex is a labyrinth of tunnels that were once filled with water. The ancient Kemetian wisdom tradition tells us that these tunnels carried highly energized water to the Great Pyramid to enable it to function correctly and to generate power. It seems that each of the pyramids is actually tuned to a different frequency and that all the pyramids together work in harmony to produce this power. It would also appear that due to the shape and construction of the pyramids, they were also used as collectors of cosmic radiations or energies. From salt deposits found in the Great Pyramid, we have evidence that the Great Pyramid, during the time when it was in operation, used hydrogen gas as part of the energy-producing process. There is also strong evidence to suggest that an accident took place in the Great Pyramid in antiquity that either disrupted or changed the way energy was produced. We can see this evidence when we look at the roof of the King's Chamber. Here we find very definite cracks in the massive slabs of granite that makes up its surface. Now, these cracks were not the result of damage from an earthquake, as there are no other cracks to be found in the Great Pyramid of the same nature. It appears that only the King's Chamber was affected, and that an explosion must have taken place, or a sudden vast release of energy that cracked the monoliths in its roof. The King's sarcophagus also appears as though it was subjected to extremely high temperatures at some point in its past. A book that I strongly urge the listener to read is entitled The Land of Osiris by Stephen Mailer. In this remarkable book, the author gives us great insight and understanding into the ancient Kemetian tradition and the purposes of the pyramids. This insight is greatly due to a meeting between the author and the present-day keeper of the indigenous Kemetian wisdom tradition. In this fascinating book, we learn about the technology used in the pyramids directly from the present-day keeper of the indigenous Kemetian tradition that built them. I cannot recommend this book highly enough, as it throws light on many questions that up to the present time could not be answered adequately. So we can see that the pyramids were actually used for a number of purposes, all of which were highly technological in nature.